And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today is Matt Smith in the 12th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. Matt will break down all of the positions so far this season and share what he has seen from a coaching perspective. However, we will start by discussing the open head coach position for the club and the craziness that surrounds it. We have plenty to discuss, but before we get started, I want to welcome back my friend to the 12th edition of this show. Matt, welcome back to the Coaching Corner.
Hey, Russ. It's good to be back. And, it's been a couple of weeks. I've had a busy couple of weeks finishing up my season and with my team. And so it's always great to be back and now and give a little bit more time to the show.
Listen, it's great to have you back. But before we go any further, I want to congratulate you and your team for a wonderful season. You know, I've been following it. And really, it's a credit to you, your staff, and all those players. So congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a fun ride. We won our first ever conference championship in the program's history. Went to the first national tournament ever, and so hopefully it's onwards and upwards. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Well, that's great. And listen, I'm glad that we could get you back on the show. But again, just to clarify, you had a lot going on, so I'm glad that you could concentrate on that. And now you have some time. We can go back and talk about Fulham. And let's start here. Before we talk about the current situation, there's plenty to get through. Share with me your thoughts on the Kit Simons era in charge of Fulham as it now has come to an end.
Well, I think probably the easiest way to describe it is inconsistent and up and down and kind of a roller coaster of an era. We had some really good times when, especially right when he first came in, we won 5 out of 9 and, thought that, hey, this could be an eye-opening experience and maybe this is kind of what we need. And But then it kind of came back down to earth in the honeymoon. The honeymoon ended pretty quickly, and we ended up just in this up and down kind of cycle. And, you and I have talked about it before where it was just kind of a time of, people calling for Kit and his job being on the line, and then he would get a result, and then he'd be okay for 3 more months. And then things would go downhill. People would be calling for his job. He'd get a result, and things would go, and he would be fine again. And so it was just kind of it was a very kind of unsettled time, I think, at the club. I think that, he came in and brought some youth with him, obviously from being the academy director and having such success there. I think that was an obvious kind of progression of what he was going to try to do. But, then he kind of, reverted back to trying to bring in outside players this year and this season with Mike Rigg kind of guiding that way. At the end of the day, I'm not sure how in charge he was as the day-to-day club stuff. And obviously we'll get into the kind of where that's going from here. But it sounds like he was just put in charge of coaching the team. And maybe there were some questions being asked about his authority and stuff like that from the playing staff, in terms of, player decisions and that kind of stuff. So, I think the easiest way to put it, it was a roller coaster of an era, very up and down. But, when you're in charge for as long as he was and you have 65 games and you only win 22, it's probably going to be, it's going to be tough. Because at the end of the day, what did he win? He won, I think, 91 points out of 64 games. So that's kind of tough to be able to move on with. Like we said before, we hate to lose him, and I hope at some point he comes back to the club because he is a Fulham man, and I hope he does in some capacity, but, unfortunately it just didn't work out. So hopefully we can move on from this and still keep that relationship. Cause I think he's a good guy. I think I think at the end of the day, he's a good coach and knows what he's doing. I just think that maybe he was either not given the support from the playing staff or the front office or whatever. And so it was just time to move on.
You know what? It was time to move on, and I wish Kit the best, and I hope he can come back to Fulham at some point and be part of the family again, because he should be. Again, he's a Fulham man, and I appreciate everything that he has done. I think he took us as far as he could take us. He stabilized Fulham in a very volatile year last year, so I want to give him credit for that. Honestly, Matt, I think he could only take us so far. Again, the best way to describe it, and I've said this several times, Fulham were consistently inconsistent. I think that where we are right now is where we should be. And I think if Kit stayed, we'd probably end up somewhere around here. But if your desire is to go higher, I think you need someone that could potentially take you further back to the Premier League and keep you there. And I just don't think Kit was the right man to take us to that next level. It's nothing against Kit. He did a very good job, but I just don't think he could have taken us to where we want to be, Matt. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's spot on. I mean, I think that he was, you know, caretaker was probably the perfect word.
Right.
You know, he was there to kind of settle the ship after the disaster that was McGatt, and just kind of to resettle the club and things like that. But I don't think that he's the one to take the next step forward with us. I completely agree.
Okay, very good. All right, before we talk about the craziness, because trust me, we're going to talk about the craziness going around right now, let's talk about the situation, because it is a head coaching situation. It's not a manager's situation. So what are your thoughts on Fulham wanting to hire a head coach instead of a manager?
I think it's going to scare people away, and I think it has. I think that, you know, what coaches want and what managers want is they want to have as much control as they possibly can. You know, obviously, you know, the day-to-day operations are going to be run by the front office in terms of player personnel and things like that. But you'd at least like to have final say of, you know, Mike Rigg comes to the manager and says, do we want this player? And the manager says yes or no. What I feel is I feel like they're basically just saying, here, we're going to buy you the groceries. Now go cook the meal.
Bill Parcells.
Yeah, exactly. And I think any chef will tell you that's, you know, if I'm going to be the one cooking, I'm going to be the one buying. And so, that I think is an unsettling thing, because with basically, you know, if your job, which at this point in the Football League, in the Premier League, wherever you're coaching, just in these days and times, you know, even though it's a full-time job, coaching a team is actually a part-time job, because you can lose that job at any time. And we've seen it a bunch, millions of examples of people being in charge for, you know, 10 games, 6 games, 3 games, whatever. And, you know, as a coach, all you want is to be able to control your own destiny. That's what you want as a manager, as kind of the head of staff. All you want is to be able to control your own destiny. You want to be able to say, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with my people and my way. And really, it seems like the club is not even giving them that option. That, yeah, you might go down, but it's not going to be your way, it's going to be our way. And so that can be a bit, you know, not a bit, but a lot of, you know, very unsettling to a manager coming into a situation. So I think that could really scare some people off, and I think possibly have already seen that.
Okay, very good. And that's going to lead to talk about what has been going on with the club. Again, there's been much speculation, much talk, and much written about what has been going on, especially the last 24 hours, Matt. Again, many stories written about the situation with Steve Clark. And apparently, again, many reports that Steve Clark has turned down Fulham. But again, what has also come out is that, again, this is basically, and Steve Clark has said this, I'm going to read something from Get West London with quotes from him. Steve Clark has come out and said that basically this was a meeting with Fulham. Again, it was a chance to talk to Fulham. And again, I think much has been said and written that was leading everyone to believe that it was farther along than it really was, Matt. I think, again, the media ran with this story and took it a little bit too far. I think what this was, based on what I've read now, again, this was a conversation. This was a chance to talk to Fulham about their open position. And we could talk about should they have done that or not, but they went to Reading to get permission to talk to Steve Clark. They were given permission to talk to him, and he went to talk to him, and he decided to stay at Reading. That's the gist of all of this. But, again, before I get your thoughts on all this craziness, I'm going to read some quotes. Again, this is from Get West London. It really is in several places. But, again, I just pulled this from Get West London. I want to get your thoughts on his quotes, and then we'll talk about this whole thing. Okay, again, these are quotes from Steve Clark. Quote, I understand the anger among supporters, but when someone is prepared to pay money to speak to me, it's something as a professional I have to look at. Quote, you have to go and find out what their plans are and what they're thinking. Could they offer something better? And the answer was no. I went to Fulham and decided what I had here was better for me. It wasn't about money. It was about ambition and professionalism. I didn't want to think what if. What I have here is more mind-blowing. I'm happy with what I have here. This was the best option by a mile to stay here. All I wanted was a chance to speak to another club and weigh up what is best for me. I believe I still have support 100%, and now I want to get back to success on the pitch. Okay, those are quotes from the manager of Reading, Steve Clark. Matt, what are your thoughts about what he had to share and also this whole situation?
Well, I think it kind of outlines what we were, you know, what we just talked about, in that I think, you know, he kind of danced around the fact of, you know, his own ambition and what he wanted from a job and things like that. And what it appears is that Fulham weren't prepared to give him that or to allow him to pursue that ambition. And I think a lot of that is possibly not having player control. You know, I think, you know, again, you know, coaches, that's really what managers want these days. And you know, I can't really fault them for that. And so that's just kind of the scary thing, is that, you know, we were an established Premier League club. You know, we come down to the Championship last season, and now all of a sudden Reading is a better situation than, in terms of club structure, than we are. You know, that's a little bit disturbing, and, you know, and I'm sure there are probably some other, you know, some other kind of, you know, reasons why he, you know, he may have not mentioned, you know, that's just a bit unsettling. I mean, I think even, you know, as close to 2 or 3 years ago, I don't think people would have picked Reading over Fulham. And, you know, now, you know, that opportunity isn't as enticing to a manager, which is, that's a bit unsettling. You know, hopefully we'll be able to find our guy. But, you know, from a manager's perspective, you know, you're kind of, other people looking at this job, this can really kind of start to make them turn their head at it a little bit and say, why is he saying what he's saying? I mean, I think Steve Clark is a very respected manager in the profession. I think he's been around for a long time, was a right-hand man of Jose Mourinho for a while. You know, so he comes with a lot of clout. And if somebody like that is going to come out with statements like that, you know, you're going to wonder, okay, if he doesn't want it, why would I want it? And so that's just the kind of the concerning thing about the whole situation.
Okay, very interesting take there, Matt. And getting back to Fulham again, what do you think about them contacting him in the first place? You know, again, I got to be honest with you. I like the fact that they're trying to find the right guy, but I was always uncomfortable, and I'm still uncomfortable about contacting someone that's in a job. Did they do the right thing by contacting him in the first place?
Well, and it depends on how they went about it. Did they go straight to Reading, or did they have somebody kind of back door or side door and talk to him first, and then go and then realize that, yeah, he would want to talk, and then go to Reading and say, hey, yeah, we're trying to do the right thing. You hope that as a club that they would do the stand up thing and go straight to Reading and say, hey, we're interested. And so, you know, I personally don't really care for that. I kind of respect the profession a little bit too much to go basically poke somebody from a job or to go headhunt, you know, from a job. And I think that can unsettle things, you know, relationships between clubs and things like that. And, you know, it's not ideal, but, you know, maybe it shows that we're willing to kind of ruffle some feathers with some other clubs in order to go find the right guy. So, you know, you can kind of go back and forth. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we've got to find the right guy for us, and we've got to get him here. You know, and so as long as you do it the right way and go to the club first and not have a third party kind of find out if he would like to talk or whatever, then I'm okay with it. But, you know, if they are doing the side door job and that kind of stuff, then that's, you know, just not really what we're all about at Fulham, I think. But you know, from the looks of it, it was very upfront and above board. So, you know, I think that as long as they accept, then, you know, obviously they were very confident in kind of what they had in place and that he would make the decision to stay. I mean, otherwise, I'm not sure why they would, let us talk to them and take their manager when they're actually having a pretty good year. So, you know, a lot of different things come into that. But, you know, I think as long as it's above board, I'm okay with it.
Okay, very good. And I'm glad that you brought that point up, because let's be honest, I think Fulham handled it the right way. Again, for me personally, I don't like, I guess you could say tapping up another manager or a head coach, whatever you want to call Steve Clark. But again, they did handle it the right way. They did do the right things here. They did contact Reading. So I have to give the club credit, and also give the club credit that they're trying to find the right man here. So they have to explore all avenues. So even though I feel a little bit uncomfortable about it, I do like the fact they are trying to find the right man. They need to find the right man. This is a huge decision. And, Matt, this also goes back to this whole thing of the press. You know, again, the press has a job to do. But they blew this story up to something that it wasn't. This was just a conversation. And, again, we don't know the other side. We don't know Fulham's side. We don't know if they were, again, prepared at this point to give him the job. They were just talking about it. So, again, you know, there was so much brought into this whole situation, and we just have to see how this whole thing plays out. But I do agree with you on this point, that, again, they did handle it the right way. They did go to the club. So, in essence, they are trying to do the right things here. They didn't go backdoor. They went to the club. And like you mentioned, Reading must have felt very confident, because why else would they allow him to do this? And I keep going back to this, and I know that you brought up, questioning the ambition of the club. But again, this is coming from a man that, again, I thought of Mark Hughes right away, Matt, and tell me if I'm wrong, because he brought up his ambition, his professionalism, because, again, he's talking about ambition and professionalism, but he's talking about his own. He has a right to do that. But if I'm a fan of Reading, how do I feel about Steve Clark right now? Because, I honestly could not be too happy with him.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder what his motives are for being there.
That's what I'm saying.
Is he there to, to improve the club, or is he there to improve himself and his own resume? I think that the fans at the end of the day, if they both lead to the same place and getting them promoted, I think they'd be fine. but if he basically gets them to the cusp and then abandons them, then yeah, they're going to be pretty upset. And so, I think you could probably find fans at Reading on both sides of this. People that would say, who cares? Hey, as long as they both lead to the same place, as long as they both lead to the Premier League, then fair enough. But then you'd find some other people that said, that sounds pretty selfish, and we need somebody who, we'd rather have somebody who, is in it for the club and not for themselves.
Right. And again, this is what's interesting about this whole situation. I'm glad that I could really talk about it in detail with you. Because when it comes to Fulham, after this whole thing, I'm glad that Steve Clark is not the man, because obviously it wasn't the right fit. Again, his ambition, whatever he wanted, didn't match up with what the club wants. And the setup that the club has, you just diagnosed what you think is going on, the struggles that they could have finding a head coach instead of a manager. And I'm not going to disagree that could be a part of what's going on here. But this is the direction the club has gone. It doesn't match the direction that Steve Clark is going in. So, again, it doesn't go any further. Both sides are better without each other. So I totally agree with that. And Fulham need to find the right man, Matt, and that's the bottom line. He was not going to be the right man. When I started seeing these quotes, again, I know I've already mentioned this, I went back to Mark Hughes, because for me, Steve Clark is coming off of someone that's really, again, thinking of possibly, again, this is just my opinion, I think he's thinking of Reading as a stepping stone and looking for something better. Why else would he be talking to Fulham? Again, it's all about him, and that's fine if that's what it's all about. I want someone that has ambition but also wants to be at Fulham for the long term. I don't want someone that's going to use Fulham as a stepping stone. And, for me, this is just my perception of this, Matt. I think he was going to use Fulham as a stepping stone.
Yeah, I do too. And maybe that we missed. Maybe we dodged a bullet at the end of the day. I would have liked to have had him, even though he is originally from a club down the road. I think he's a good manager. I think he's proven. But at the end of the day, maybe we did dodge a bullet.
Yeah, listen, it's an intriguing topic, and I'll be talking about this in our preview show along with my other two co-hosts, but definitely wanted to touch base with you, Matt, because, you and I are doing this show from a coaching perspective, so I really want to get your thoughts on everything going on with the club from a coach's view. So, again, let's move on from talking about this craziness, and let's talk about what you're looking for from a head coach. We've already established that it's different from a manager. So what are the important traits that you want to see from the next Fulham head coach?
Well, definitely some traits that I think we need is we need somebody who has experience taking a team from the Championship to the Premier League. I think that that's something that Nigel Pearson was going to bring. And I know there were a lot of people on both sides of the fence with Nigel Pearson. I know he's a very polarizing figure in terms of his personality and then the way that he goes about things. But you know, he did take Leicester from the Championship to the Premier League. I think that's something that I would like to have in a manager, is somebody who knows how to get out of the division and knows how to move forward. You know, I think it's somebody who is basically really just going to keep us organized and somebody who's going to make us play a certain style. I think that, you know, I think that with Kit, you saw us play about three or four different styles, you know, three or four different formations. You know, are we playing with Matt Smith and playing long ball, or are we playing with Musa and Ross? And so you just want to have somebody that can really lay out a 3 to 5 year plan of where we want to be and kind of how we want to get there, and you know, and really be able to kind of go through with that. You know, I do think that Kit was thrown into the job because of the unfortunate situation with McGatt going out and just kind of the unsettling of the club there, and so I don't think he maybe was given the time in preparation before he got the job to really be able to kind of go through that stuff in his head and be able to kind of organize that. Because once you get thrown into the fire, you know, as I say a lot of times, you know, during the season, is really you're firefighting. You're putting out this fire. You know, hey, we don't defend corners well. Well, let's put out that fire this week. You know, instead of having a broader vision and being able to prepare that as you come in. So I think that's going to be important for the next manager or for the next head coach, I guess, as they put it. But you know, I think the biggest part is just the experience in the division and understanding how to win games in the division is probably the biggest trait that I need as a manager.
Okay, very good. And let's move on to the big question. I really want your opinion. Who do you want to be the next Fulham head coach, or I should say the Fulham head coach, because it's not next. We're changing from a manager to a head coach. So who would you like to see in charge?
Well, I personally would have loved to have seen Nigel Pearson. I think that, you know, a lot of people said, oh, he's brash and he's tough and all that kind of stuff. And I say, well, Kit was a nice guy, and that didn't really get us, you know, didn't really get us a long way. You know, but then I rethought that, and I said, you know, that would be pretty similar to what I see a lot in college coaching in terms of, you know, people trying to go to the polar opposite of what they had before. You know, hey, this didn't work. Let's get the complete opposite. You know, I deal with the women's side in college a lot, and you'll see a lot of people that will have a female coach, whether they're a good coach or a bad coach, whatever. And then all they want after they fire a female coach is they want a male coach, or vice versa. And that's not always the recipe for success. But that is kind of usually a knee-jerk reaction of, hey, look, we saw that this didn't work, so we need something completely opposite, and that's what will work. When really, you know, maybe just a little tweak to a personality or tweak to kind of the way they do things is the best thing. You know, I was all for Paul Lambert, you know, from the get-go, and then when he got swooped up, you know, that was kind of tough to handle. You know, I'm not sure that I have too many names in mind, to be honest with you. You know, I think that, you know, when I looked at it, Lambert and Pearson were kind of my two favorites for different reasons. You know, Lambert, just with his success and taking, you know, and kind of his ability to, you know, what I've seen him do with you know, at least when he first got there with Villa, you know, and then Nigel Pearson taking Leicester up and taking a club up and keeping them up, you know, was very enticing to me. So, you know, that's kind of my fear right now is that I don't have a name at the tip of my tongue that we think that's probably the most disconcerting thing about this is that I honestly when you ask that question, I'm not sure I can give you one answer, and that's a little off-putting, I think.
Okay, and listen, it's understandable, and that's why, again, I wanted to talk about the big picture, and I'm glad that we started this because, again, I don't know the right answer to this. You know, it really does seem like a factor could be here, and again, I don't know for sure of why we don't have a head coach is the way everything's structured. You know, again, the difference between a head coach and a manager, Matt. You know, I've been going back and forth on this because I think Mike Rigg has put together a really good Fulham squad. Okay, I do. But I'm looking at the other side of this. And again, I know it's a different sport. And you brought up buying the groceries, and I'm thinking of Bill Parcells. Listen, I'm here in New England. I can't help but think about Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has complete control of the New England Patriots. Now, he has someone that actually helps him do the job of recruitment and finding the players. But he has the ultimate say. He calls the shots. He has people working underneath him. It is still, I guess you could say, a collaborative group that work underneath him. But ultimately, the say goes with Belichick. And, you know, again, I like Rigg. I think Rick is doing a great job. So, again, it goes back to the crux of the problem. Is it the structural form, which I actually was in favor of in the beginning, Matt? I thought, you know what, bring in someone to really bring in the players. Or is the old school way of having someone with complete control the way to go? So I guess that's what I'm struggling with.
Yeah, it's and I think with a lot of managers that's going to be a tipping point and kind of a deal breaker. And especially with somebody the experience of Pearson and with Clark, I think that's probably something they were looking for was to have some sort of player control, maybe not absolute control,
right?
Just some sort of player control, and at least maybe the right to veto a move.
Right.
You know, so you don't know kind of the ins and outs of that, but that's something that I think that a lot of managers want, and that can definitely be a deal breaker.
Right. And honestly, and again, I go back here and I think about how Bill Belichick works with his staff. And again, he challenges staff to talk to him, to work with him. Ultimately, he has a say, but, and again, I'm just thinking off the cuff here, maybe the right head coach that is willing to work with Mike Rigg and basically have this collaborative working relationship. But again, it works together in unison. I guess it's going to have to take the right man that can work underneath this situation, because again, I believe in Mike Rigg, but it's going to take the right person to be able to handle the situation as it is, Matt. You know, again, understand that you're not going to have final say. You're going to have input, because I've heard in an interview with Mike Rigg, he's going to take the input, but again, he will not have final say. So maybe it's just the right person that's willing to work with someone that's going to find the players for him. He'll have input, but won't have the final say.
Yeah, that's, I think that, before we criticize Mike Rigg, we don't really know the ins and outs of it, and we don't know the specifics of it. I think that seems to be standing firm on something, I think he might be willing to go a little bit, a couple matches, a couple matches more before we find the right guy. And if he shows that kind of patience and we do find the right guy, that's great. If he shows that kind of patience and we don't, and we're finding another manager in February, then he's going to look like he has pie on his face. So,
yep.
That's something, he's under pressure now too, because this is really his first head coaching personnel decision that he's had to make. And so I think that's why he may be very cautious with this, because he wants to make the right one. And
right.
So that, I think that may be why it's taking longer than we think.
No, listen, it's a good point, Matt. And again, let me just say this again: we're not insightful, and we don't know exactly how things are going. I'm just going based on what I've heard from Mike Rigg. And let me just stress this: I've said this already. I believe in Mike Rigg. Again, this is what they've decided to go on. So that's what we need to do. The person coming in will not have the final say. But if he finds the right person that's willing to work with him, because, again, this has got to be someone that's willing to work with him, I'm willing to take that time and wait and find that right person. And and all hope is not lost at this point. We just need to wait and wait until he finds that right man to be in charge of coaching the team, because he wants someone that's going to coach the team. He's going to run the recruitment, and he'll take input, because again, everything that I've listened to, he will take the input, but he will have that say. He will have that say. I'm talking about Mike Rigg, and then that manager will be in charge of just running the club. So again, I guess the best way to put it, Matt, is it's a wait and see, and we just got to have faith that Mike Rigg will find the guy that can work with him.
Yeah, and that's a very unsettling thing. That's a tough thing to hurry up and wait, and because we all want manager, and we hope that, you know, we thought that it was great timing, actually, because we talked about this in the last international break, that, hey, this could be good timing to get somebody in during the international break, give them a week, a full week to prepare for a game, and, you know, now all of a sudden the international break is over. I mean, we play tomorrow, and so, you know, I think a lot of fans see this as a chance lost to be able to move forward, but, you know, it's all going to be in kind of how it ends up, and if it leads us to the right person, then I think everybody's going to be happy, but, you know, it's just kind of the fear of the unknown right now, I think, is probably what's unsettling people.
It's definitely the fear of the unknown. We are going into uncharted territories, and apparently it's going to be Alan Kerbishley who will be in charge tomorrow, and I wish him the best of luck, you know, and again, he has the experience, so I think the team's in good hands for the match on Saturday, but again, in the long term, let's give Mike Rigg time to find the right guy. I know it's unsettling. It's not the right situation that we all want. But the best situation is that he finds the right guy, and obviously he hasn't at this point. So I'm going to try hard. It's difficult, Matt, but I'm going to try to be patient. It's difficult. It's not in my nature, so I guess I need to be a little bit more patient and see how this all plays out. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. That's probably the hardest thing to do, because it's definitely not in my nature either. I want to try to fix things, you know, especially when I was a very young coach. I always wanted to fix things right now, and I wanted things to be, you know, go from 0 to 100 right now. And you know, you gotta. The biggest thing in coaching and running a program is to develop that kind of patience and to have a vision and to trust and really put 100% trust in that vision, you know, in the long term, and be willing to take a step back or even a step to the side, you know, before moving forward. So it can be tough things for fans to hear, because, you know, they want us back in the Premier League next year. And I'm really one of them. I mean, I definitely want us back in the Premier League as fast as possible, but I think we want to get there and be able to sustain there again, like we did in the past, not instead of just a 1 year thing and then get there and be a flash in the pan.
Right. And I think that's what this is all about. This is about matching the vision of Mike Rigg, Shad Khan, Fulham Football Club, with the right man, the right head coach, the vision. Each person has to be on the same page. Again, this is a collaborative unit that they're doing now. This isn't one man completely in charge, because again, Mike Rigg still needs a head coach to run Fulham Football Club on the pitch. So he still needs someone to do this. So again, it is a collaborative situation, but the vision has to be on the same page here. And until he finds that, again, I guess we have to be patient until he finds that person that is going to have that same vision. And then, you know, because the vision ultimately, I believe, is, like you mentioned, Matt, not just to be in the Premier League, to be successful in the Premier League long term like we were before. But who knows, maybe even better than that, be a team that can be in the Europa League on a regular basis, you know, again, fighting for Europe. You know, and I'm jumping so far ahead, but my ambitions are huge for Fulham Football Club. We've been there, and we need someone that has a similar vision, that wants to get not only Fulham back in the Premier League, but to stay there and to thrive. And until Mike Rigg finds that man, he should be searching, and hopefully he will find him sooner than later. All right, enough of talking about that. Let's now look at the team, because I do believe that, again, this is just my opinion. I'm curious your thoughts. I do believe that Mike Rigg has set Fulham up with a good squad that can fight for top six. So let's break this down. 16 matches in, Matt, what is your overall assessment of Fulham Football Club from a coaching perspective?
Well, I think it's what we talked about before. It's consistent, like you said, consistently inconsistent. You know, just kind of up and down and not really knowing what you were going to get. You know, yeah, we're coming off of two straight defeats, but two straight defeats to two pretty good teams. You know, overall, you know, where we are, you know, we're definitely not out of it. You know, we're definitely right there, I think, in the thick of things and, you know, definitely better off, you know, right now than kind of than where we were at this point last year, just because of where we had to come from last year. You know, we were, you know, nine games and bottom of the league and things like that and really having to build out from there. You know, and luckily we were able to do that just, you know, barely to get, you know, out of the relegation zone. But so I think, you know, if you look at that, you know, just from that perspective, then yeah, you said, yeah, we're set up a lot better to make a run. You know, I think that, you know, it's just been it's been the same old story. It's been, you know, my God, or, you know, not really knowing what team is going to show up day to day. And that can be, you know, extremely frustrating to a lot of people. You know, we've got some big games coming up. You know, so hopefully we can just kind of build on that. You know, we are dead middle of the table. I mean, we are as middle of the table can be. You know, but at the same time, we're only 8 points away from a playoff spot. You know, and we've got some games coming up in, you know, with the teams around us, you know, so that we can really make some hay. So, you know, hopefully we're able to do that kind of in the, you know, it's almost a halfway point in the season. Not really, but, you know, we'll have some games coming thick and fast here in the Christmas period, things like that. It'll get us there. And, you know, hopefully, I think one thing that we will see, and I think something that really has helped us this whole year is that we actually do, if we're healthy through the Christmas period, we could you know, make some differences because of our squad depth.
Yep.
You know, we've got some good players that are going to be able to play. You know, when you have midweek games week after week, you know, you're playing, you know, five games in 2 weeks or whatever. And, you know, I think we do have the squad depth to be able to kind of take us forward. So I think that's something that can really look forward to with this period.
Okay, very good. And talking about the squad depth, and I completely agree with you. Let's talk about the overall talent. I think they're good enough for top six. Do you?
I mean, I think that we've seen, you know, that on our day, I think that one, what I always say to my teams is how good is your good? And how bad is your bad? I think kind of where you can measure yourself as a team is on your best day, how good are you? You know, and on our best day, you know, we can score goals with anybody. We can keep clean sheets. You know, we're very, very good in goal. You know, so, you know, you put those things together. We've got some experienced players, but we've also got some youth and exuberance that, you know, in the division. And, you know, so I think you put all that stuff together, it can definitely be a winning combination.
I totally agree. That's why I think this decision that Mike Rigg has to make is huge, because I think if you put the right person in charge of this team, being a head coach, I think I truly believe that it's not too late, that we have an opportunity here if he finds the right guy. All right, let's now look at these 16 games and break down the positions. I'm curious your thoughts. You know, a couple minutes on each one here. Let's break down the positives and the negatives with the play from the goalkeepers so far this season.
Well, there's definitely been a lot more positives than negatives. I think that, you know, probably – you know, maybe the biggest negative is the fact that, you know, we haven't had one healthy goalkeeper. But I think on the flip side of that, I think the positive is that we clearly have three very good goalkeepers.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really lose a whole lot when one, you know, unfortunately goes out with an injury. So, you know, I think it's I know it can kind of sound weird, but, you know, that negative of not having one healthy goalkeeper, you know, and knowing who's going to be in between the pipes for you and things like that, wasn't a huge, it was definitely, the blow was definitely softened because of the quality coming off the bench. You know, whereas last year, you know, Betts gets hurt and everybody is literally holding their breath for 90 minutes. You know, and unfortunately I was at the game when Karai had to come in and we got thrashed by Watford, last year. So, you know, it's been a real position of strength, for us. You know, we've had some, you know, there's been the game, you know, the games that maybe our goalkeeping wasn't stellar, but I'm not sure you can point to too many goals where you're kind of looking at the goalkeeper saying, hey, that was your fault. You know, and really, if you can go through a season and only have, you know, tops a handful of goals that you can really point to the goalkeeper and say, hey, you've got to have that, then you're going to be in a good position. You know, so I think that's barely been a position of, you know, probably our strongest position so far this year.
Okay, very good. And let's move on. Let's talk about the fullbacks. I'm really curious your thoughts on the fullbacks so far this season. What have been the positives and the negatives you've seen from their play?
Well, I think, you know, to start with the negatives, you know, I think just the inconsistency of people like Jazz Richards. You know, I think on his day he's a decent player and he'll put a shift in, but seems very disinterested at times and disinterested with getting forward. I think Ryan Frederick has been a breath of fresh air back there. I think that, you know, just his athleticism and things like that has really livened up that position and livened up our options going forward. You know, similar, James Husbands has been fantastic since he's been back. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I think that possibly the best piece of business we could do is to try to sign him permanently in January. And that's something that I would definitely try to do, because he seems to really wear his heart on his sleeve and really seems to give his all for a club that doesn't even own him. And I think that says a lot about a player that can really play as hard as he does and with the passion that he does, you know, for a club and for a fan base that doesn't even really have a stake in his future. You know, and so that can be a very good thing. But, you know, I think just just from the positional standpoint, I think a negative has just been the consistency of attacking from our fullbacks and, you know, how deep do they sit? Are they getting forward? Are they overlapping our wingers? You know, some games you'll see that and will be very good. Actually, not even some games. Some halves of games you'll see that, and some halves you won't. They'll sit back and really invite pressure. So, but the positives, I think that just recently we figured some things out back there and maybe got some consistency with our team selection. Hopefully we can keep that consistency with our team selection, because I think we've been, you know, pretty dangerous when we can use those guys going forward. You know, so hopefully we can just kind of keep that going.
Okay. Very good there, Matt. All right. Let's move on to the center backs. You know, it's interesting because I truly believe, based on what I've seen so far this season, that we have not just three, but we have four quality center backs. I'm going to throw Sean Hutchinson in that because I think he showed promise. Hasn't played much lately, but share with me the positives and the negatives of the center backs. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do think we have, you know, four center backs that are capable of playing at this level. I think that Ream and Stearman have shown themselves to be probably our best pairing. I think that they've been a part of some of our best performances. I think Dan Burns, maybe his progression has stalled a little bit, you know, whether that just be just from him not getting opportunities or what he's showing on the training pitch, which is why he's not getting opportunities. You know, I think people tend to judge people just, you know, fans tend to judge players just on game day. And, you know, that's a very realistic thing because that's the only day they really get to see them. You know, and they ask, you know, why does this player not get an opportunity, you know, this player, that player, whatever. Well, you know, they actually do have an opportunity every day in training. And so there's something, you know, that you just wonder kind of has his progress solved. But, you know, in the games that he's come in and played, he's played a bit role and has done it very well. You know, you wonder if it was too much too soon with him. You know, too much pressure on a very young player to kind of come and be a savior and pull us out of the relegation zone last year. If that was maybe too much for him to kind of handle and succeed in. You know, but you know, what we've seen of him this year in the small parts that he's played, especially recently, in the past couple months, he's definitely improved his steadiness and just kind of his guile in defending and just, you know, being, you know, relaxing and kind of a calming force. I think maybe he's learning maybe from Tim Ream, you know, with that. So, you know, I think it's another position of strength, I think, but, you know, we need some consistency with that, and I think that it's something that can really move us forward.
Let me ask you this, because, again, we have experimented in a few matches now with 3-5-2, and the three of them playing together. Do you like that option for fall?
Well, I think what it does is it gives us more ability to go forward because it is, if you look at it, I probably would call it a 5-3-2 because the people that are playing those wing positions, are James Husbands and Ryan Fredericks or whoever. You do tend to find that those wide positions, of the five are played by outside backs. And so what it does is it, with the three center backs, it allows us to be better in the air, maybe us better being defending corners, us giving a little bit more height to win those balls in the air, and just people who are natural defenders. In these days and age, when you have the wing backs, and even when you're playing a 4-4-2, those players are notorious these days for not being great defenders. They're more outside midfielders, move back to outside back to just attack from deeper spots. So to have three center backs and three guys that are willing to get stuck in and really know their defensive duties, I think can be a very, very good thing for us.
Okay. Could this be a situational thing? Because I'm thinking to how it worked so well in one match against Bristol City, but against Burnley, again, watching it back, it seemed that it didn't work as well, and part of it I thought had to do with the play of Andre Gray for Burnley. So could this just be certain teams it might work better against?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think a team that you're going to be, that they're going to try to stretch you and try to, play in wide places and then try to play inside of that. I think it could be somewhere that it could be tough to do that because then your center backs who just honestly aren't as athletic traditionally as outside backs. And that can kind of put them on an island. But there definitely are some teams where you think that you can get at and you can win the ball higher up the field that it can definitely be more successful with.
Okay, very good. Very interesting. All right, let's move to the midfield. I'm curious your thoughts, the positives and the negatives of the players playing in the midfield.
Well, I think the biggest positive to me has been Jamie O'Hara so far. I think that he is, arguably our player of the season so far. I think you probably could get some strong arguments for Moussa Dembele and maybe some other people, maybe even one of the goalkeepers. But I think Jamie O'Hara has come in and has been fantastic. Like you and I have talked about, he's really filled in that Danny Murphy role that really has been a void in our team since he's been gone. He controls the pace of the game. He can really control possession and calm us down, and he can also speed us up and play the important pass going forward. So he's definitely been one of the biggest positives, so far. I think Tom Kearney has also been very good, has been probably the more consistent of the outside midfielders, and even when he has come inside, I think he's been very good for us. Ben Pringle has been kind of up and down, and his inconsistency is something that maybe one of the reasons that we moved to a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, without him playing a more consistent role because of him being just up and down in terms of performances. I think somebody who's come on in the last month or so is Ryan Tunnicliffe. I think he's been fantastic. I think that maybe what he lacks in his defensive mindset, I think he brings in just going forward with pace and being kind of adventurous and ambitious going forward. And I think that's something that we've been able to do. I mean, if you think about it, from last season to this, I mean, we were looking at LVC as being kind of the linchpin of the team. I think that we've been able to bring in players that have been able to make him have to have a role coming off the bench, or maybe it's a spot starting role. And so I think that, if you just look at that simple fact that we were depending on LVC to basically change us this year, and yet it's been other people that have changed us and him kind of taking a passenger seat role, I think kind of shows the progress of the club, especially in that position.
Okay, very good there, Matt. Very good. All right. Let's move to the strikers up front. I'm curious your thoughts about them. Overall, strengths and weaknesses.
Well, I think that, especially if you look at it, it's tough to look at it over the past two games, because the last two games we played, there's clearly been some turmoil going on, clearly still been some unsettling going on, and yet they were against two very good teams. And they were, obviously, losing at home that badly to Birmingham City can be kind of disheartening, but, the last two teams we played are both in the playoff positions. And, I think that, so you can't really judge us, simply on that. But so if you look at kind of the last month or even the season as a whole, it'll be great to get Matt Smith back, to real full fitness. I think that he's still working his way there and getting his match legs underneath him. But I think Moussa Dembele has been fantastic. I think we're watching, we're watching a very, very special player grow right in front of our eyes. And I think that Ross McCormick can actually be applauded for helping in that and aiding in that, because you can tell that he's working to find him and he's working to get him the ball in the good spaces so that he can be successful and things like that. And so I think that's something always good to see from your captain is to aid. And there's really two ways it can go. Your captain can even look at that and be threatened by him. And be threatened by, oh, he's going to take my goals away and things like that. And Ross McCormick has been nothing but professional and hey, he's going to help the club. And so we're going to, I'm going to try to help him do what he does. And he's been great. And, Ross has been kind of just a workhorse, I think one of the negatives maybe is that he is the workhorse and we don't really know where to find him sometimes because he's all over the pitch and covering every blade of grass. But honestly, if that's the worst thing you can say about him, I think he'd take that. The fact that he's, you work so hard, we don't know where you are when we get the ball, is not necessarily an insult. But I would like to see more consistent play in terms of just combination play from the strikers and just really us being able to win the ball higher up the pitch. I think when we've been able to do that and we've been able to find our two strikers, in and around the box in areas, I think is when you've seen us, be at our most dangerous. When you start to see us, find Moussa Dembele, 30 yards from goal, and that's where he's picking the ball up, you don't really see us score a whole lot of goals. But when we are able to find him in the channels in between the center backs and the outside backs, 25 yards and in, then my God, the kid's dangerous, and especially on the counterattack, he's dangerous. So when we can find them early, if we get them good service, I think we've been successful. And I think that's what you've really seen pretty consistently over the course of the season so far.
See, I completely agree with your assessment, but I want to go back and talk a little bit about McCormack. You and I have talked about this a great deal. His ability to go deep, I think, is causing some issues. You were talking about it. Again, trying to do too much is the way I would say. He's, in some ways I understand it. He's trying to help out the team. But his best role is to stay up front, I think, with Moussa Dembele and let everyone else around him do their jobs. Do your job, stay up front with Moussa, work with him, and let the midfielders do their job. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. I mean, I think when he's been able to do that, before these last two matches that we've played, I mean, we were unbeaten, in five games. And I think that's when he's been just more stable in his positioning. And I think on the counter of that, we've been more stable in the back. We've been more stable in the midfield. And so I think that when he sees that stability, he knows that he doesn't have to do all of the work, and he has some trust in the guys behind him. And, I think that shows in kind of his positioning and where he gets the ball. I think if you look at his, in my Instat index, when you look and see where he starts a lot of his actions, if they are within the width of the penalty area and about 30 yards and in, we usually win those games. When he's picking up the ball at midfield, or when he's winning the ball at midfield, or when he's winning the ball in really wide spaces, is when you see us either drawing or losing games.
That's a good point.
And so that's a very consistent thing that I've seen over the course of the year. And, I think that what that shows is exactly what you're talking about, is that he's working too hard. He's trying to do everything and carry everybody on his back as compared to trying to just play his role.
Right. And it's a domino effect. You were just talking about it. Let everyone play their role, do their role, again, from the defense to the midfield. And if he could just worry about his role, and again, I understand where this is coming from. He's trying to do everything, but his best role is staying up front with Moussa Dembele. If he can just concentrate on that and trust the players around him, Matt, I think you're going to see a better Fulham side because, like you said, Fulham probably win more games when he stays up front.
Yeah, and I think that that really, you know, the manager that comes in next or the coach that comes in next, I think is going to have a wealth of options, you know, up front. And I think that there's a lot of managers that should be looking at our roster saying, wow, I can really go there and do something.
Exactly.
You know, maybe I tweak this, maybe I tweak that, but the personnel is in place to be able to do that. So that can be a very exciting thing. So hopefully we find somebody that sees that soon and we can move forward quickly.
Exactly, and that's what this is about. Again, going back to the whole thing of finding a head coach, we needed to find the right man that could harness what Fulham have because I think they have the talent to be in the top six. I do. I truly believe that. And maximize the abilities of all these players. Put them in the right positions to succeed. If a coach can buy into what Mike Rigg is selling, that this is your job. Your job is to coach the team. You can have input on players coming in. I have final say, or it's more of a collaborative effort. If you can just coach the team and put these players in the position to succeed, I think Fulham can go up the table, but it's going to take the right man. This is what they've decided on, whether I think it's right or wrong, Matt, you think it's right or wrong that we should go for a manager, because there's a part of me that does feel that way. You know, again, I'm here in New England. I understand how Bill Belichick does it. I see how other sports and teams do it. You know, it does work, but this is the direction Fulham are going in. So, you know, this is what they're going to do, so they need to find the right man that fits that job, and that's a head coach. Whether I agree with it or not, that's what they're looking for. So, anyways, Matt, before we go, we only have a few minutes. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this show?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that we have some really big games coming up. You know, MK Dons is just above the drop zone, and Preston North End and Nottingham Forest are, you know, still below us. So some big games coming up. Hopefully we can get some points out of it. So hopefully the guys will be ready to go. And, you know, and just some really big games. Really the next six or seven games are very, very big. And so hopefully we can kind of get off to the right foot coming out of the international break. Hopefully we can find the right guy to take us forward and we can just move up the table.
I couldn't agree with you more. The games coming up are crucial. And there's an opportunity here, and that's why I'm glad that you mentioned these games against, you know, especially the next two games. Crucial, because if you could get all 6 points of these winnable matches, both of them are winnable matches. You know, MK Dons, a completely winnable match, and, of course, Preston North End. And Nottingham Forest, they can beat Nottingham Forest coming up. So, again, if they can get, I don't know, 7 to 9 points out of the next three, I think we're moving in the right direction, Matt. But listen, before we go, I just want to thank you for really a truly special show. This has been great, my friend.
Hey, it's great to be back, and always great to talk Fulham and to keep my coach's hat on for a little bit more, even though it's in my off season. So it's been a lot of fun. I can't wait to do the next one.
I cannot wait either. And listen, we're going to be tweaking the show moving forward. We're going to bring in some more ideas of things to talk about. I look forward to it because I want to make the coaching corner even better. It's great now, but we're going to make it even better. I promise you that. Well, that's going to do it for the 12th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look down.